106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with me, your show host, if you so desire. Still to come, Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. And then my friend from up in the Birmingham market, Paul DeMarco, former lawmaker, now attorney, also columnist. You can read him in the Trustful Tribune, as you can read me there, but DeCall News and other places. Joining us now on the line, I hadn't had him on in a while, but he's keeping track of these statewide races. I thought it would be good to get him on and kind of talk about some trends here, but he is the publisher of the Coleman Daily. Sam Roberts is with us. Sam, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Thank you for making time for the program. We do appreciate it. We'll kick it off here. And, my first kind of general take of this election, and I haven't seen something like this. And, midterms are generally low turnout. See a lot of undecideds, more undecideds than you typically see, especially this late. And, are they going to break? Or do we kind of think that maybe when they make their declaration, they're a likely Republican voter, they're not going to be there on a Tuesday?
Yeah, we definitely saw a trend of a lot of undecided voters, even leading late into this election. First started polling back in March, and all the way back in March, even on some of the bigger races like Lieutenant Governor, United States Senate, we were seeing 70 to 80% undecided just a couple months ago in March. That number is still around 50% of voters, likely Republican primary voters for next Tuesday, are undecided, even on some of the bigger races happening statewide, which is odd because this has to be a record-breaking spend in Alabama politics. There's millions of dollars being spent on each race up and down the ballot. And still, even with millions spent, commercials everywhere, you see a lot of undecideds just a week out from the election. But we are seeing some trends of where undecided voters are going to. I've been tracking through the polling that we've ran to several hundred thousand voters all across Alabama that are likely to be voting in next Tuesday's primary election. And we've been tracking the trend of where their votes, where they started at in March and where they're landing at now. So I feel like we have a good idea of what we're going to see next Tuesday, although we still have 6 days until the election and a lot can change.
Do you think that Trump endorsement, obviously Tuberville didn't need the Trump endorsement because, he's his own phenomenon. But the other two races, did that move the numbers? Because those were two of the races you mentioned with a high number of undecideds. And some of the candidates have kind of been stuck in West Allen in particular, he's been running for almost 2 years, and he's still in that, 15 to 25% window, not really able to hit that, break out of that ceiling there. And, consistently, it was undecided. And then, obviously, the Trump endorsements, did that move the numbers much?
That's an odd thing that we've seen in several different recent elections. I'm a MAGA person. I'm a Trump believer. I voted for Trump all three times. But what we have seen with the Trump endorsement, I think that the Trump endorsement doesn't hold near the weight that it did back in 2018. Just ask Mo Brooks or some other recent candidates who have ran here in Alabama that touted the Trump endorsement. I think it's a great thing to build credibility. It's a great thing for fundraising. It's a great thing to get a certain group of voters to vote for you. But the problem is that group is only 20 or 30% that's going to vote for you solely because of the Trump endorsement. I think where a lot of candidates are going wrong in statewide elections are if they get the Trump endorsement, they run their entire campaign as a Trump campaign. They don't campaign on anything that they're going to do. They don't campaign on their own campaign. It's all about Trump. And the problem is you see it all the way up and down the ballot. If you go and look at a county commission's race, you look at a county sheriff's race, you look at a state senate race, a state house race, all the way up to governor. You look at any race, every single candidate on the Republican primary ticket, their ads, they're all going to include Donald Trump. Not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm saying that it kind of waters it down when you have the Trump endorsement, because every ad statewide, every race, like I said, all the way down from county commission, school board, sheriff, all the way up to statewide ballots, every candidate is touting Donald Trump. And, you know, less than 50% of voters are even aware who Trump has endorsed, even with millions of dollars spent in these races.
Yeah, because it is more of a thing that you could fundraise off of, and probably to a larger degree, it keeps other people from giving to your opponents who don't want to be on the bad side of Donald Trump, right? So it's good to have in your back pocket, but it's not really moving votes. But I mean, in an election with so many undecideds, and what's going to move them? I don't know if a Trump endorsement can't move you from undecided to candidate X, then what will?
Well, agreed. And I think that Barry Moore is running into some of that problem. Barry Moore had this race won 2 or 3 months ago. He was smoking everybody in the polls, but then he hit a ceiling. And that ceiling was that he ran out of people that the Trump endorsement was going to sell them.
Go ahead.
Back all the way in March, and we haven't seen much growth from his numbers because every single ad we're seeing, it's nothing but Trump. We're not seeing a lot of ads about policy or what's going to happen after the election.
Well, and then Club for Growth comes off the top rope there, gets Steve Marshall. I think that backfired bit to some degree. But talking about the Senate race, Jared Hudson, I think, has really outperformed my expectations. But Marshall, I expect, will get something. I don't know why, but he ought to get some kind of boost out of this redistricting news.
Yes. So that was the next thing I was going to touch on. If you asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have told you undoubtedly that Jared Hudson was going to surprise everybody, and he was going to be second next Tuesday, and that he was going to outperform any kind of expectation, and he's going to head to the runoff against Barry Moore. Today, I'm unsure of that. I do lean more to thinking that Hudson's going to be second still, but there has been undeniable growth from Steve Marshall's campaign over the past week. In polling, just last night, or about a week ago, we had Hudson getting close to 28, 29, 30%. Steve Marshall was like 8 points behind in the polling that we've seen. And, you know, there's different kinds of polling, IVR polls. It's like flip-flops. You know, Hudson under – it's like Hudson's and Marshall's numbers just flip. Hudson's always ahead in text polling and Marshall's behind, but when you do IVR, it's the other way around. But in my opinion, Hudson has more troops on the ground, which is why I believe that he might over-poll are under poll and actually perform better on election day. But Steve Marshall with the redistricting, even in text polling from what I've seen, he had undeniable growth and is closing the gap quickly on Jared Hudson. Hudson has to respond fast or Marshall will be headed to the runoff with Barry Moore.
The interesting thing in the last few days with Hudson and Marshall, it looks like their strategy is to go after Barry Moore. Is there any can they pull anything away from Barry Moore? Because I think the name of this game is solely just swaying those undecideds, getting people. It's a turnout game for your guys. I don't know that you can take votes away from other guys.
I agree with you. I think Barry Moore's base, I mean, for one, a lot of them are people that are just going to vote no matter what with a Trump endorsed candidate. That's a lot of the support. That's a lot of the 30-something percent you're seeing for Barry Moore right now. There's nothing you can do to change their vote. And I agree with you that I think by attacking Moore, you're not really peeling off any of his people. But I agree with you on Barry Moore's attack or the Club for Growth attack against Steve Marshall. Some of the things that we've seen, Marshall is growing in the polling. It's undeniable over the past week. Every single poll I've seen, he continues to trend upwards. And Hudson had consistently grew for the past 3 months, and it's like that has suddenly hit a ceiling. And now Marshall is the one seeing the growth in his polling. So that is going to be a really interesting race. I'm more interested to see what happens in that race than any other race statewide. I feel like nobody really knows what's going to happen. I do feel like Barry Moore is definitely the front runner. But the problem for Moore is that he's polling roughly the same now as he was 3 months ago. So in a runoff, he's got to win over some of the voters from either Hudson or Marshall. Is he going to be able to do that? I don't know. My projection is that if Moore goes to the runoff against Jared Hudson will defeat Barry Moore. If he goes to the runoff against Steve Marshall, Moore will hold on and defeat Steve Marshall.
That's an interesting take. I think Barry Moore always underpolls, though. He's polled, traditionally underpolled, that his typical supporter just isn't going to respond to a poll. And that's worth at least 5 points in a lot, especially in his congressional district.
You're right about that, and we have seen really strong numbers from Barry Moore in South Alabama, the Mobile area, his old congressional district, the entire Mobile TV market. Barry Moore is extremely strong, and so he's undeniably strong, really, really strong right there. But the problem is, what is going to happen if Jared Hudson pulls 50% in Jefferson County and 50% in Coleman County? That's where Jared Hudson's numbers are really, really strong, and they're still strong today. In polling that I've seen, you see Jared Hudson consistently pushing around 50% in Jefferson, Coleman. You see him ahead in Walker and Blount. You see him close to 50%. There's a lot of Republican primary votes in that area. What happens if Jared Hudson actually does pull 50% of voters in Jefferson County? That's going to be a lot to make up for in South Alabama. But on the other end, yes, Barry Moore is also going to have extremely good numbers in Mobile. Are they 50%, though, and is it enough to make up for what Hudson is pulling in North Alabama? That'll be more of a talk for in the runoff because, you know, obviously Moore is going to be first place next Tuesday. You know, unless something crazy happens between now and then, and do certainly expect for Barry Moore to be in first come Tuesday. But in a runoff situation, that is why I still stick with, if it's Barry Moore and Jared Hudson, Jared Hudson surprises everybody and he wins. He wins it in North Alabama is what's going to happen next month if you see Barry Moore and Jared Hudson. I think that if you see Steve Marshall, you know, I just don't feel the same momentum on the ground for Steve Marshall. I think he's a strong candidate. I just don't see him pulling over 50%, though, if he hits the runoff against Moore.
Because the way it looks to me, and then we got to move on, but the Marshall will do well North Alabama. And you said Barry Moore will do well in South Alabama, but Jared's just owning Birmingham. If it becomes a Marshall-Moore runoff, it's just a fight for Birmingham. But otherwise, in a runoff, low turnout. And if you're Jared Hudson and you're dominating Birmingham, you should do well in a low turnout event in the biggest population center.
That's my projection. And what I have seen in the Huntsville TV market also, Hudson's numbers definitely take a drop there, but he is contending really strongly with Marshall in the Huntsville TV market. If Hudson and Marshall are even in that Huntsville TV market, it's over and Hudson heads to the runoff with Barry Moore because Marshall is not going to be able to make up for it in Jefferson, Coleman, Walker, and Blount counties. He's going to lose so much ground in those areas and in Shelby, the areas around Birmingham. He's not going to be able to make – he's got to make up for it in the Huntsville TV market if you're Steve Marshall.
Lieutenant Governor, Wes Allen, he is the leader. And there's no doubt about it. But the only thing that makes me nervous, he's not really moving. He can't get to 50. I mean, can he get to 50% in a runoff? You know, it's a weird field. Wall does have the Trump endorsement, you know, and I don't know that he's making or is able to make the most of it. But what do you see there?
Like you said, undeniably, the past ever since, you know, polling started several months ago, Wes Allen has been in first place. We've seen John Wall definitely grow in the polling over the past few months. He's a clear second, but what John Wall needs in this election, you have to present, if you're John Wall, you have to prevent Wes Allen from getting 50%. The issue is that you have a lot of candidates in this race, but you also have a lot of candidates that are unlikely to get very many votes. You have a lot of candidates that's just going to be at 1%, 2%. John Wall needs for Nicole Wadsworth and for Rick Pate to both be over 10%. If you see Pate and Wadsworth, if they're both around 5%, Wes Allen could very easily win the selection without a runoff. He has to have good performance from Wadsworth and Pate. He needs both of them to be around 10 to 15% to get enough support to send the selection to a runoff. I'm afraid if you don't see that happen, if you see Pate and Wadsworth, like I said, around 5% and the other candidates at 1, this could very potentially end next Tuesday with Wes Allen.
The AG's race, it looks like Catherine Robertson's opening up a little bit of a lead on Mitchell. I think that Pam Casey's got a puncher's chance to run off, but right now, if I'm betting, It's Robertson getting a plurality. Mitchell coming and saying, I think Mitchell's just run a terrible campaign. He's listening to these out-of-state consultants who just look at numbers and go with the lowest common denominator message. But what's going to happen there?
So in the AG's race, if you asked me a week ago, I would have told you Catherine had a really good chance to win this election next Tuesday. We're not even going to a runoff. Today, Mitchell pulled that horrible ad about sending illegals to Mars. That was killing him statewide. The best ad that Catherine's had is Jay Mitchell's campaign. It's been terrible from the start. He's had trouble competing with Pam Casey, who he's outspent, 5-1 in this election? It's crazy. But still, next Tuesday, Mitchell has had a little bump after he's changed up some things on the airwaves, but I do expect Catherine to be around mid to low 40s. I'm thinking Catherine is going to be around 43-44%. You're going to see Mitchell around 30%, and Pam Casey with the rest. But Pam Casey has a new TV ad out that is performing well. I think that ad is taking a little bit more from Catherine at this time, and I think part of that's because you have two females in the race, and she's taken a little bit of her support, not a lot, but a little bit. But if you're Jay Mitchell, you have to be careful, because if Pam Casey gets enough steam over the next few days, it is not impossible that she overtakes him and heads to the runoff with Catherine Robertson.
Real quick, ad commissioner and auditor, what's going to happen there?
In the ad commission race, my projection is you see a runoff with Corey Hill and Jack Williams. That race has been pretty close in all the polling I have seen, but Christina McGinnis seems to consistently come in third. Every poll from start to finish seems like she just consistently is a little bit behind. Anything can happen. Everything's kind of within the margin of error there, it seems like, but she's not. McGinnis should be running up votes around Baldwin and Mobile County, and she's not. She's doing well there, but I don't think she's doing well enough to send herself to the runoff. My projection is that you see Corey Hill and Jack Williams head to a runoff, and from there it's a toss-up. In the state auditor's race, Chin had a little bit of momentum going for him, but I think that Sorrell, he has responded. He has been outspent drastically in this campaign, as the Chin family has funded, I think, nearly $1 million into this race. So that is an insane amount of money spent on us, especially from the candidate on the state auditor's race. But I do project for Sorrell to end up over, I'm going to say he's around 60% in the polls.
Well, I'll get you out of here on this. Folks want to find you, Coleman Daily Online. How can they do so?
They can find us. Our primary platform is on social media, Coleman Daily News. We're located right here in Coleman, but we also love covering state politics. I love polling races, so I love keeping up with what's happening and races statewide and following the trends of everything. So, like I said, that's my projections today. A lot can change between now and next Tuesday. On Tuesday evening, right before polls close, I'll probably put out my final projections for every race statewide, or all the statewide races at least, and then the Coleman County races on Facebook. We can see how those line up with what happens on next Tuesday's primary election. But until then, we will keep track and see what the trends are between now and next Tuesday.
Sam, we appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back to FM Talk 106.5.